Welcome to The Bull Show. It's Sunday, November 20th. I'm your host, Nils, and with me are two guys who missed the old Kanye, Mitch, Ricky. What's going on?
Kanye went crazy, huh? He just, this is all the way out.
Ricky, are you still a Kanye fan after what he pulled last night in Sacramento?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of just reading up on that now, but I've pretty much always been a big Kanye fan, just like Mitch, I think, and just like yourself. But I mean, I don't know, Kanye. He sounds like he's going off the deep end a little bit lately.
This might be the last straw, similar to Jay Cutler's game last week against who were they playing that they got destroyed by?
They got destroyed by somebody not great. I forgot. This shows you how big of an NFL fan I am.
It's not much we've given up on the Bears. But basically, Kanye's Sacramento moment. Tampa Bay moment last week. I think I have to fold on becoming a Jay Cutler apologist and a Kanye apologist.
It's been a rough time. It's been a rough time for everybody.
All right, fellas. Well, what a week it's been for the Bulls. We have a special in-studio guest who you might be hearing in the background. That is not Timbaland's Aaliyah beat of a toddler squealing. That would be my son, who apparently can't be away from this hot Bulls discussion.
Not a fan of Kanye either.
I guess not. So it should be interesting. You know how some podcasts have dogs barking in the background? We might have my 17-month-old son screaming in the background, but you know we're going to power through this. As I was saying, Bulls had a pretty surprising start to the circus trip here. They go 2-1, dismantling the Portland Trail Blazers, and then winning ugly in Utah despite only racking up 8 assists. Things then took an interesting turn last night. Of course, we're recording this on Sunday morning, where they could not hold on to a 19-point lead against the LA Clippers, ended up losing, I believe, by 7. Guys, I want to kick this episode with this question. Finish the sentence. Bulls would have been undefeated this past week if Ricky, let's start with you.
I think if they could find a way to guard stretch big men, it's been a theme throughout the season that big men who can shoot have given them some trouble. And you saw it last night with Mo Spates. The Bulls, I think, you know, ultimately played a pretty good game last night. They were up 19. They lost. That's tough. But a lot of people think the Clippers might be the best team in the NBA. However, if you're going to lose, don't lose to Mo Spates. Mo Spates ripping threes.
That's Mo Buckets to you.
And I respect Mo Buckets because he's a shameless gunner, just like myself when I play basketball. So, you know, I see that. But
game recognized game.
Yeah, exactly. But the Bulls' pick-and-pop coverage was just terrible. There were several times where Portis just had no idea what he was doing in terms of closing out or denying the drive. It's happened several times this season. Like, I'm willing to lose if CP3 rips your heart out. I'm willing to lose if Blake Griffin just dunks all over you or if DeAndre is blocking every shot. But Mo Spates threes is a tough pill to swallow when you're up 19 on the best team in the league. That could have been a statement win for the Bulls. That's the type of victory that could have sort of propelled them, given them the confidence they could play with anyone. I don't know, maybe they think that already because they were able to hang tough with the Clippers, obviously, throughout that game. But man, death by Mo Spates, I don't like to see that. So I think that was their big issue.
Hey, Mitch, there was an uproar on the Twitterverse that, Hoiberg was making a pretty bad decision by keeping Bobby Portis out there. He justified post-game that he was the only one that could probably keep up with Mo Spates on the perimeter on those pick-and-pops. Do you think Hoiberg was justified looking back at last night's game, or do you think there was a better option because Portis was pretty awful?
Yeah, I absolutely understand the idea why you'd want to play Bobby Portis down the line, both for that game. He is probably the most mobile of the Bulls' options in the backcourt. In the front court. And also, you've made a large investment in him. He was a first-round draft pick. He's a guy that has shown a lot of potential, so you want to get him those reps. With that, though, I just don't buy it. I just don't think that I'm ever going to put Bobby Portis in the game if I'm the coach, if I'm looking for a defensive stop, even if it's for matchups. I think the Bulls had a great opportunity to go small there. I think Jimmy Butler is such a versatile defender that he can guard Blake Griffin. And at that situation, I'm going to be playing maybe a three-guard lineup with Jerian Grant, who who showed a lot to me this week, or maybe going with Denzel Valentine. And I know, you know, Nikola Mirotic, not a great defender, was having a rough game, but I'd even go there. You really, really, really lose a lot, especially late in terms of boards, in terms of, you know, coverage with Portis. And I think that, you know, I don't think it's the reason why the Bulls lost, but, you know, this fascination with closing with him to me is something I don't really love.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, a pivotal point in the game was an offensive rebound by Mo Space, which, of course, was Bobby Portis's man. And perhaps if the Bulls got that board, I forget at what juncture exactly it was in the game and how much they were down by, but Okay, so it definitely was a, I wouldn't say turning point, but killed any momentum the Bulls could have had. Mitch, you also talked about Jimmy Butler guarding Blake Griffin, which he actually did during another critical point in the game when the Bulls, I know this for a fact, they were down two. Maybe it actually was subsequent to the Mo Spates offensive rebound, where Butler got caught on a switch with Griffin on the perimeter, pretty much had him in handcuffs, and Griffin had to let go at desperation. I think it was a two-pointer to beat the shot clock. Controversial call. Butler ended up with the foul. On Twitter, I likened it to Scottie Pippen's phantom call on Hubert Davis, where Hugh Collins, you know, decided to blow the whistle there. What were your thoughts on Butler being up Griffin on that play and drawing the foul?
As a, you know, premier defensive player in pickup basketball, you know, that stuff like that just really, really, really gets my goat. I was arguing with some guys, you know, that I play pickup with, and they were talking about, they made a good point that, you know, Butler's got to give Blake the ability to come down. I think he did. I think it was a horrible call. But, you know, I don't think one call ruins it for you, right? There are like hundreds of plays during a game, hundreds of key moments, and if there's one play, you can't really say that's the reason why the Bulls lost. But with that said, I thought it was a bad call. But it does show you the defensive versatility that Jimmy Butler has, man. Jimmy Butler's a dog, man. And for him to, you know, Blake Griffin was having a great game late in the shot clock, forced him into a terrible shot. I mean, this shows you what type of season that Jimmy Butler's having.
Butler's defense on that possession was so good for the first, you know, 10 seconds of the 12 seconds. And then he just, like, Griffin wasn't going to make that shot. Like, Butler just pressed up on him a little too much. And he put the ref in a position where the ref probably was going to call a foul regardless. But, like, Jimmy basically just suffocated him on the entirety of that possession. I think it really shows Jimmy's value because, like, not only is Jimmy capable of getting 22 points yesterday in a game where he couldn't really buy a bucket from the field, also, like, who's your best defensive option on Chris Paul? Jimmy. Who's your best defensive option on Blake Griffin? Jimmy. Those are two completely different players.
Yeah.
But Butler's defensive versatility is really what sets him apart.
Yeah, I think Coach K was talking in the summer about there are not many top 10 players that stop other top 10 players. And so, quote something to that effect, and Jimmy's that guy, right? Jimmy's a stopper. You know, you can only think about Kawhi and Jimmy when you're talking about that group of really elite players that can really just go shut somebody down. And obviously, LeBron kind of used to be
LeBron's
that.
LeBron's going to delete this podcast.
Yeah, LeBron used to be like that, but, you know, doesn't really focus on that. And, you know, Kevin Durant has shown flashes of that at times. But, you know, Butler does it every single night, and it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, Jimmy can guard positions 1 through 4, and you know what I've just been noticing these games is that he's so quick and so strong on both ends of the floor. It's like playing football is not out of the question for him.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That guy just bulldozes away down the lane, draws contact, doesn't, you know, it's almost like mosquitoes on him just because it doesn't affect him at all, and just powers up a shot. And then on the other end, you know, you just can't get by him when he has the energy to move his feet and hold his ground. And, you know, like you said, from Chris Paul to Blake Griffin, Jimmy can be that guy
Do we see the 2-minute report? I never saw it. Did the 2-minute report cover whether that was a foul or not? Did anybody see that?
I didn't see it.
Yeah, I didn't see it either. I don't know if it came out.
Well, going back to my original question about finishing this sentence, I would go ahead and say that the Bulls would have been undefeated this past week if they were a better 3-point shooting team. They ended up, I think, going, what, like 9 for 30 last night, and most of that, over half of that came from a scorching Dwayne Wade, and we just knew that, you know, at the beginning of the game, that wasn't going to be sustainable with the threes that he was jacking up. And I think in the fourth, they went 1-for-9, where Nico had a few good looks.
Yeah.
Cannon had a look, as well as, I think, Rondo, that I think were almost potentially dagger threes, but they just couldn't knock them down. And so, you know, going again back to they are who we thought they were, the Bulls couldn't knock down shots from the perimeter when it mattered most.
And I don't know if we're going to get to this, so I'll just bring it up now because I think it's a big deal. We got another, and you guys talked about it last week when I wasn't on. We got a Rajon Rondo problem, right? Late in games, if you're going to be giving the majority of the ball handling duties to Jimmy Butler and to Dwayne Wade, why is Rajon Rondo there in the end of the games? And he had two opportunities. He actually hit a three, I think, late in the fourth quarter, maybe in the midway in the fourth quarter. But I just don't understand, if you're looking for possessions, his lack of shooting kills you, but also, more importantly, his lack of defense kills you. So you got a guy like Grant. You got a guy like Cannon if you want to go offense. I just don't understand why Rajon Rondo is playing at the end of these games.
You know, I'm still not sold on Jerian Grant. I mean, he has shades of Kirk Heinrich in him, where he just pounds the ball and just has such terrible court vision. I remember watching earlier this week the Blazers game, and there were multiple possessions where he literally dribbled for 20 to 22 seconds out of the shot clock before either getting bailed out with a foul or almost turning the ball over. And there were flashes of peak Rondo last night, where at least he was getting into the lane, making some really clean passes that, of course, led to assists. And Rondo did have a decent stat line. I know that perhaps some may argue that those are empty stats of almost tallying a triple-double. But I'm just not ready to have Grant at the reins at the point guard position just yet, just because I just don't know if that guy might be too much of a ball stopper when you have, you know, again, guys like Jimmy and Wade on the perimeter.
Well, I think that's actually the point, right? Because when you're playing late in games, you're not going to be relying on Jerian Grant to handle the ball, right? So the situation in the middle of the second quarter is going to be a little different than the situation in the last 6 minutes of the game. So I don't think you have to worry about Jerian Grant actually, you know, stopping the ball. The ball is going to be in the hands of your two closers, and you just need people that are going to play a better supporting role. Guys that can, you know, shoot the ball a little better. Guys that can guard. You know, this may be more about defense, and I want Ricky to kind of chime in here. You need stops at the end of the game. That's kind of another problem I have with Portis, right? Portis and Rondo are both guys that really make it difficult to get stops. So, you know, you're right. Grant hasn't been perfect. You know, he went 2-for-10 against the Jazz. Didn't have a great game. But in terms of those late game situations, I think the Bulls can go to a different place.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason you've seen Isaiah Cannon really win over Fred Hoiberg. You know, he reminds me of Brooks a little bit, in the sense that he's a short three-point shooter, but he plays tougher defense than Brooks, despite his size. And I think, you know, what you said about Jimmy and Wade controlling possessions at the end of games, what you're looking for then out of that other spot, out of that point guard spot, or, you know, however you're going to shift the lineup around that other perimeter spot, is just someone who can impact the game off the ball with catch-and-shoot ability or with cuts. I think that's where Grant could sort of, like, make his name a little bit. And then, you know, defense is obviously the other thing. I think that if Grant really wants to become a solid player in the NBA, he should become an elite defender. He's got the tools. He's really athletic. He's 6'5". He has the size to guard the one or the two, maybe even the three, and some switches. So I like Grant. I think he's got a high floor because of his size, because of his athleticism. I do totally agree with Nils's criticism of him, though, is that, you know, the ball sticks to him sometimes. We even saw it in summer league, and we saw it in the preseason too. I was really high on him in Notre Dame, and I think that, you know, he was – it's a big adjustment. We've seen this for Portis too, going from we're always like the guy, like changing your mindset to go from the star of the team to a supporting player. Not everyone can do that. It's an underrated adjustment to make. And I think for both Portis and Grant, that's something they're going to have to do, because for a lot of young players, like you're just not going to, you know, get that star treatment from your own team. You're going to have to carve out a niche, and that's, you know, not dominating the ball. And a lot of it comes down to catch and shoot and playing good defense.
So the last thing I'll say about last night's game, we're actually in reference to, you know, the first segment of the show about whether the Bulls would have been undefeated this past week if I think they would have been undefeated simply if they weren't playing the Clippers.
Yeah.
They finally, I feel like they finally faced a legit team, even though they were on the second night of a back-to-back. And this segues nicely into my next question, which I feel like I ask you guys every week. Are the Bulls legit? And we can even narrow the scope into, are the Bulls a top four Eastern Conference team? Mitch, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's only two teams in the Eastern Conference that are clearly better than them, that are the Cavs and Toronto. And I think they're in discussion with everybody else. They're in the discussion with Boston. They're in discussion with Charlotte. They're in the discussion with Atlanta. So, yeah, I think it's going to be very easy to see the Bulls, be a top four team. I hate to say this, but I almost expect it at this point.
Do you agree, Ricky?
If you had to ask me where they'll finish, I would still probably say six. I'd probably take all five of those teams over the Bulls. But, like, I don't know. It's different, like, regular season versus seven-game series. Like, I would take the Bulls' chances against, I don't know, maybe Charlotte in a seven-game series. I think the Bulls would get smoked by Atlanta in a seven-game series. Yeah, they just don't seem to match up well with Atlanta. Atlanta shooters in the front court give them a lot of trouble. I don't know. Like, Mitch named those five teams that are sort of going to – those are the five teams the Bulls are in competition with, I guess, in terms of pecking order. For the playoffs, at least, that's what seems like 13 games through the season. And that's pretty great, you know, from a fan perspective, because a lot of people didn't even think they were going to make the playoffs. Now here we are talking about where they fit into the Eastern Conference hierarchy. I don't know where they fit in with those those other five teams. I probably put them a little bit below in terms of the regular season record, but we'll see. I don't know.
So do we see any team from the bottom of that group, right? Or not even from the bottom that I didn't mention. Teams like Indiana, teams like Milwaukee, teams like – I know how you guys feel about Washington, New York. Do any of those teams jump up and talk in that discussion?
You said that there are two teams clearly better than them, Mitch, with the Cavs and Raptors. I don't know. I feel like I'm not completely sold on Boston, but I think they're eventually going to get it together. I know that they've suffered through some injuries, but I would expect, especially with the coaching ability of Brad Stevens, that they would, you know, jump into that, you know, top four level of Eastern Conference teams.
Yeah, and the Pistons would be the other team I would watch when they get Reggie Jackson back. Yeah. Ish Smith's been pretty good for him. I always roll with Ish Smith. I think that was a really under the radar signing for them that's worked out pretty well. But, Drummond always murders the Bulls. When the Bulls play Drummond, like, you pencil him in for 26 rebounds and, like, you know, four blocks or something. He always just crushes them. Maybe that changes with Lopez now. Lopez is a little stronger on the block than Noah was.
Yeah, that's one thing Lopez does give you, is that he gives you kind of a little bit more credibility with those bigger kind of guys like DeAndre Jordan, like Andre Drummond. So hopefully we won't see that elder abuse that he put on Powell the last couple of years.
You know, I really want to buy into and believe in this Bulls team, and I think I started doing that, but there's still a part of me that thinks this Bulls team is smoke and mirrors, just because when I look at their schedule, they still don't have that signature win, and I think a lot of their wins that they have had, maybe those teams aren't as good or weren't as good as projected at this point in the season. We've already acknowledged their lack of depth in the front line when you start. You know, I had mentioned last night on Twitter that every time I get excited about this team, you know, I remember that we're basically relying on guys like Nico and Bobby Portis to come off the bench and give us productive minutes. I think those two guys are still wildly inconsistent to be confident in this team's success going forward.
We're rolling up and smashing Portland is a legitimate win.
That was their best win.
I mean, that's a real win. Like, that's a real, real win.
I don't know, but maybe Portland isn't as good as no, you know, we think they're. I mean, Portland ended up losing to the Pelicans the other night. Damian Lillard has acknowledged that they suck right now, and you know, I don't know if again they're going to be as good as people say they are. I can't take the Portland win as seriously as I'd like to right now, because I also think they were coming off a second night of a back-to-back as well. So
I mean, yeah, they've lost to the Rockets, they lost to the Clippers. I mean, they kind of have lost to kind of every team that they've played that have been really, really good. But I still think on the road, this West Coast trip, I mean, I think most people thought that we would probably go, you know, 0-4,
1-3. I'm on record that this team was going to go 0-3 this last week, and they went 2-1. So yeah. I'm happy to be wrong.
Yeah, interesting game tonight.
I still have my guard up.
Yeah, definitely.
Before we get on to tonight's game against the Lakers, I did want to ask you guys about the Bull of the Week. Who do you guys got?
My Bull of the Week is Jerian Grant. I don't think he was obviously the best Bull. Obviously, Butler had some bigger games. Wade had some, you know, had a really big first half this game. But I do think that I was a bit worried about what would happen without Rondo. Not that I think Rondo's very good, but, you know, you're launching a new guy into the system. Do you launch Cannon? Do you launch Grant? They're going to play, you know, 30-some minutes. What type of production you're going to get there? And you got good production all three games, so, or all two games between the Jazz and the Blazers. So I would go with Grant.
Who do you got, Ricky?
I'm probably going to say Butler just because I think Butler's been so ridiculous. Like his defensive versatility, as I mentioned, just the fact that like he is the most consistent offensive option. Now, how are the Bulls scoring? They're either scoring on offensive rebounds or scoring on, you know, Jimmy clear outs. He's getting to the line or he's finishing at the rim or he's hitting jumpers. Or, you know, if he gets hot, Wade threes like he was against the Clippers. I think he ripped 5 threes in that game. And so I think, you know, of those options, I'm going to go Butler just because it seems like you can count on him every week, and that's huge.
You know, I'm gonna actually go and give my Bull of the Week award to Dwayne Wade just because, and we've talked about it before, either on the show or offline, this guy's still really good. And he's still showing flashes of a superstar. Mitch, I know that we have our group chat, and I think I called him a super overqualified role player at this point.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy that, even though he's obviously not playing as many minutes as he used to be, he's still highly effective. He's such a great run stopper and also closer. When another team is making a run, you know, you could basically give the ball to Wade on the wing and let him do work. He's going to get to the line or hit a big bucket. That could be said also for end of games. You know, we saw that during the Jazz game. And, you know, as we've talked about with his performance last night, hitting a career-high 4 threes in the first half, he's kind of reincarnated himself into 2007 Ray Allen. So, you know, that might be one of the reasons why I think this Bulls team might be legit and why I'm starting to buy in. And probably the biggest thing that we've recognized about Dwayne Wade, and Mitch, we've talked about this, he's had such a monumental impact, I think, on Jimmy Butler and really just allowing him to flourish. I mean, it sounds cheesy going back to, you know, the first day of training camp. We called it Jimmy Butler's team. I think that's really resonated. I think that Butler trusts him, and he is the type of leader that Butler's needed just for that guidance. He's almost become like a sensei to him. And, you know, you compare that to how toxic the locker room was last year, where Wade is just the polar opposite of a guy like Derrick Rose or even Pau Gasol, and just being, you know, not only vocal but also putting his words into action. Dwayne Wade, man, I mean, I think he's a big reason, and it's kind of stating the obvious, but a big reason why the Bulls are doing as well as they are and why Jimmy's doing as well as they are.
No argument here.
All right, let's look ahead to tonight's game and the rest of the week. I know that there were concerns from all of us that this episode is going to be outdated pretty immediately, just because the Bulls are playing later tonight, still in Los Angeles. No change in venue since they're playing at the Staples Center, but of course they're facing the up and coming Los Angeles Lakers, who a lot of people are saying are probably the most fun to watch right now, given that, you know, not only they're having success, but with their young assortment of talent in D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle, Jordan Clarkson, Brandon Ingram, that this team is just really exciting. Showtime Lakers are back. How do you guys like the Bulls prospects against Lakers tonight, coming off of last night's frustrating loss? Mitch, what do you say?
Well, we get lucky. We'll get lucky if we have no D'Angelo Russell. He's a game time decision. You know, the Lakers have been good. They've been very, very good. They're just above 500. Julius Randle's had a breakout season. I would project that the Bulls would be able to get a win tonight, especially knowing if Russell doesn't play.
The Lakers like to push the pace, so I want to see if the Bulls will play how they did in the first few games of the season, where they were really moving the ball quite a bit and, you know, playing as up-tempo as possible. So I want to see, you know, if the Bulls try to match the Lakers' pace or if they try to dictate a slower pace. I think that'll be interesting. Yeah, I'll go Bulls win, though. Why not?
I'm gonna go against the grain. I feel like this is a schedule loss. You know, you play a hard fought game last night. You spend the night in L.A., possibly getting lit. And
there's no more parties in L.A. I heard.
Yeah, this might be a game where you want to monitor Instagram before you put your bets down. I don't know what you're gonna do.
Right. I don't know. I don't see the Bulls bouncing back with the fresh legs, the fresh and young legs of this Lakers squad. I think it is going to be dependent, as you said, Mitch, on D'Angelo Russell's availability. I don't think the Bulls win tonight. I do think that they win the next two games against the Nuggets and the Sixers, just because those two teams are obviously not as talented and are still projects at this point. And hey, you know, Bulls on 1-2 days rest are a dangerous team. As long as the Bulls get a break in between games, I have a lot more confidence than them playing on the second night of a back-to-back.
No doubt.
All right, let's wrap things up with a quick look around the league. You know, as we like to call this the fast break. News and notes on what else is going on. You know, I use the analogy of this Bulls team as you know, them being almost a stepdad. In that they, you know, you had an ugly divorce between parents. And you're not ready to accept the new regime because obviously the old one, your biological father, had brought you so much happiness. And of course, I'm referring to guys like Tom Thibodeau, Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah. Those guys, of course, meant a lot not only to us fans but to the city. Obviously, we've been keeping an eye on them to see how they've been doing. Obviously, we wish them the best. But both teams, Thibodeau with the Timberwolves, and of course Joe and Derek with the Knicks, have struggled out of the gate. Both are, I think, under 500 at this point. I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on which team has been a bit more disappointing at this point, Minnesota or New York. Ricky, what say you?
I'll say New York, just because Minnesota is still so young. Like, their timeline is not immediate. The Knicks' timeline kind of is, in a sense, just because of Melo, even though, I mean, Porzingis is... He's really been incredible the last week or so, too. So I think, you know, the Knicks don't have a totally doomed future outlook just because they have Porzingis. But I'll still say the Knicks have been more disappointing because they do have veterans. I thought that they would be in position to make the playoffs this year for sure. Of course, we will go down with the sinking ship that is Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, believing till the very end. But, you know, the RPM rankings came out this week and Rose was, like, horrible in that. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Knicks are more disappointing just because they got vets and they still can't seem to get on a roll.
Yeah, I mean, the Wolves are rolling in 21-21, 21-26, 26 of the starting lineup. You should not be judging what the Wolves are going to be doing 12 games of the season. So I think it's definitely the Knicks.
So breaking news, the Knicks are not a super team, or is this just a case of, you know, super teams take time to gel?
They take time, man. I mean, took the heat a year, you know? It takes time.
My heart just broke seeing the headline or the article that, you know, Joakim was benched at one point and has put up, I think, three games in a row of no points. And, you know, I almost want Joakim to be more successful than Derek at this point, if I had to choose, just because, you know, Joakim left on a little bit better terms in my mind, and was still a guy that, you know, didn't say the most outlandish of things to the media during his time here. Whatever the case, I agree with you guys. Knicks have been a lot more disappointing. Speaking of the Knicks, they came under fire, or at least their GM and team president came under fire earlier this week, Phil Jackson, for referring to LeBron's inner circle of businessmen as a posse. And I was interested to get your guys' take on the situation. More specifically, in the words of LeBron James, I wanted to get your opinion on whether you have, in fact, lost respect for Phil Jackson due to this incident. And, of course, I want to start with you, Mitch. Being an African-American male, hearing these words, I think your opinion is pretty important here.
Yeah, I wish my posse would get me millions of dollars of endorsements and contracts and make sure that I have one of the best reputations of any athlete in any sport. So if that's what a posse is, then we need to have more posses.
Do you think Phil was wrong for what he said?
I think that I think there's a lot of times where people that are older don't think about the words that they use. I think that if you want to find an interesting take, Van Gundy had a really, really good take about this, about how he did use the word in the past, and it's just something that he'd not thought about. And now that he's thought about it, now that he's understood that he would never use that word to describe a white athlete's kind of surroundings, that he kind of understands like the connotation behind it. So I don't think that, you know, I'm not sure that Phil Jackson had a deep thought about it. I hope now that he understands it, that people have brought it to his attention, that he understands the damage of words. I don't know if he's had a response to kind of the backlash for him using it. So I don't know if I would say I was disappointed in Phil Jackson, because that's kind of what I would expect from a guy of his age and his stature to think that way. But I just hope that we can kind of take this kind of point to kind of get better, right? That's the key, right? You take criticism. You understand it. You understand the other side, and you change your beliefs and change the way you act based upon that input.
You know, the only time I've heard the word posse, with the exception of this latest incident, in the last 10 years, the only time I've heard the word posse was when your wife referred to. Apparently, I have a bunch of groupies.
Let's move on from that.
And your wife decided to call your bunch of groupies a posse. There was a word in front of it that had some alliteration. I'll save it since this is a family show. another incident that happened this past week would be Devin Booker's ejection, which was very entertaining. He got tossed earlier this week in a game. I think it was against Memphis.
Wait. I'm sorry. I got time out here real quick. Did anybody see what Joel Embiid just did last night? That he won a game last night and then wore his own jersey to the club? Can we just talk about that right now?
Imagine.
Wait, when you say that he wore his own jersey, was it like a fresh jersey, or was it literally the same jersey that he wore during the game?
I don't know, but I'm looking at pictures of him at recess with his own. Man, that's exactly what I would do if I was an athlete. All right, go on.
So you know what that was reminiscent of? That was reminiscent of Ron Artest going out to the club in his full Lakers gear after they won the title.
Yeah.
Now, it's a little different going out and celebrating after you won a title versus winning a regular season game.
I mean, basically, that's like the title for the 76ers. Like, anytime they win, it's pretty similar to a title. Also, shout out to, like, not being able to be spotted as a 72 African dude at a club. Like, you need to, like, really, really, really hit that point home with your own jersey.
Yeah, I'd be down with it as long as it was, a fresh jersey and maybe put on some X body spray.
Sorry, really, I need to derail that.
That's the important thing when MB goes to the club.
Well, I was going to ask you guys about Devin Booker's ejection, but phrase it in Bulls terms. Who had the better ejection this past week? Devin Booker, where he exited the arena while signing an autograph, or Fred Hoiberg last night, getting his first ejection of his career, which is obviously out of character for the Bulls coach. Ricky?
I loved Hoiberg getting ejected because, you know, there were a couple calls, as the one we mentioned, Jimmy's foul on Blake that went against the Bulls late. I think it's just good for the players to know that Hoiberg's got their back in the fight for him a little bit. But, you know, if Hoiberg would have signed an autograph, I'd give him the overall edge in this. But Devin Booker, that was hilarious, signing an autograph on his way out. Seems like such a nice young man, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So we'll see Devin Booker.
Crazy. Just turned 20 years old. The thing about Fred, I mean, were either of you guys concerned about his heart condition?
Well, no, I wasn't, because he wasn't that mad, right?
But he was. That was the first time I actually saw him show emotion. Like, he's been like the white Tony Snell,
I guess. But Dwayne Wade had a really good quote where he basically said, "I didn't even hear him arguing. Like, I didn't even, like, he never talks. Like, the ref should have just walked away." And the ref had a couple technical fouls there late in the game. He had a technical foul that got the Bulls back in it. They were down, like, I think, 7 or 5, and they called it.
Yeah, they got one.
They're down 7. And who got it? Was it Mo Spates?
Oh, CP3. It ended up being a 3-point possession because Butler hit the tee and Wade hit the 2 free throws.
Like, I don't believe in really technical fouls late in games like that. Like, you just got to, I mean, unless people are, like, running onto the court and, like, trying to fight you. Like, I just don't think the refs should really be putting themselves into the game like that. So I didn't like either technical foul. I didn't really think that what you call it got his money's worth. Like, Hoiberg got his money's worth. Like, he was gently, like, you know, talking about the call, and he got thrown out of the game. It was stupid. Like,
You know, I feel like Booker needs to take it a step further next time. I would be surprised if there is a next time, since he does seem like a nice young man. But what would have been dope is if he pulled a Rodman, took his jersey off, and then signed the jersey and gave it to the fan.
That's revolutionary.
That's next level right
there. Yeah. Also, shout out to Klay Thompson for drinking a beer during the interview.
Did he really? Like a post-game interview? Like in the locker room?
Yeah, good. Coors Light. He was revolutionary. He was amazing.
Wow. Wow. Talk about no more fucks to give.
Yeah.
Last one before we head out. There was an ESPN article that was pretty insightful on the relationship between Mark Cuban and Chandler Parsons that covered or documented their split in Dallas before Parsons decided to sign a contract with the Grizzlies, where, you know, they were boys and it was kind of a pretty high profile bromance, if you will, and just surprising that, you know, the Mavericks ended up letting Parsons go. I highly recommend you read the article if you haven't. I'm probably not doing the best explaining it, but the question I have for you guys is, which NBA owner not named Mark Cuban do you wish you were bros with? Ricky, I'll hand it to you first.
Oh man, I didn't think about this at all. Who are some cool NBA? Oh, obviously MJ. MJ is the only answer to this.
I feel like the thing though with MJ is that, especially with how in touch we are with social media, it would, all the conversations with MJ would be trying not to mention all the crying Jordan memes that have popped up after every loss to, you know, high profile loss.
Also, I've always said this in debating the, you know, Jordan versus LeBron GOAT status. Like, theoretically, if you went to high school with MJ and you went to high school with LeBron in alternate universes, you would probably be cool with LeBron. Like, LeBron would be, like, a nice guy, but MJ would probably just be a bully. He'd, like, be a dick to everyone. I just assume, like, that's just who MJ is. So I'd say I'd want to be boys with Jordan, but Jordan would secretly just, like, talk mad shit behind your back and make fun of you for being, like, short and pale and, like, bad and stupid.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be behind your back, actually. I don't think he would be behind your back.
And imagine how much money you'd lose just being around MJ.
Yeah, you try to play ping pong and you'd be putting like $5,000 on the table.
Mitch, who's your ideal NBA owner?
I mean, I would say MJ. I'm just looking for fashion tips. Like, the jean game on MJ is just strong. And if I can get